All right, Rich, let's go to the mailbag. Got an eclectic mix of questions. Tim B. begins with, hi, Wade and Rich. Do you think we will ever see Will Ospreay or Marty Scurll in WWE? And if so, what could we expect from them? I think when we say that, we have to assume they would start in NXT. And I think NXT would probably use them about as well as they're using Ricochet and Aleister Black. Those would be the two parallel comparisons, I guess, I would make. You can see if correct me or not correct me, but add your own. And I think they'd be utilized well there. But I don't know about the main roster, Rich. I would think Will Ospreay has just a great look. I mean, he's just this great looking guy who in a cruiserweight division or in the role of a Finn Balor, a smaller but not tiny, but a AJ Styles type heavyweight contender too. I think he's got a super marketable look. And would be utilized well. And, you know, Marty Scurll a little less sure, but I would give a thumbs up to him having a chance to make it. I'm curious for your thoughts.
I think Marty, it sounds weird, but I think Marty would do better in WWE main roster if they were just to be plucked into it right from the start because of his experience with reality television while being a wrestler. So that gives him that and his character. He can go from serious to psychotic very easily. And I see that it's something that's been a constant in Vince in terms of wanting that character that has the edge. Now his lack of height might be a thing that works against him. But I really see that. In terms of NXT, I'm with you. I think they both would do very well. I think that Will Ospreay, the biggest question is going to be health. Because he said in numerous interviews, he's had herniated discs. He has issues with his neck and how much WWE wants to roll the dice if those issues aren't addressed.
Well, and if I were him, I'd shut up about it, first of all, and then I would go to WWE and earn some damn money while you can. And what I mean by that is WWE is a place where he can get by on the things he has that don't involve a terrible impact on his neck and his back and the parts of his body that's wearing out at a young age. I would think that is the perfect place for him because they aren't going to ask him to do things that's the place for him to go if he's already that beat up. I mean, he's 25 years old and he's already talking like that, you know, like, so he should go to WWE. He's got a good natural look as a overall wrestler that they can market the hell out of, and he can go in and work a more conservative style. He's proven whatever point needed to be proven that didn't need to be proven, but whatever point he wanted to prove about his that he pushes through anything that happens in a match and can do all these great spots. Now he can go into, you know, 12 years early, the Rey Mysterio mode of get yourself over, lean on two or three spots. I think it was who said, you know, there's a certain style you work to get over and then a certain style you work once you are over and want to earn money. And I don't think it would take him long to shift gears and go there. And for that reason, I just think as long as he's not doing the style that he's currently doing in WWE, I would think WWE would be willing to roll the dice on him in that way.
Yeah, I think to me, and I mentioned this during the episode, the deep dive we did on hate watching. I'm sorry, not hate watching, on New Japan and how much they need to change themselves from, you know, even to the cellular level to get in with North Americans. You need to realize that, for me personally, I separate the two. I enjoy WWE. I enjoy New Japan. And when New Japan guys leave for the WWE, I see it as, okay, I get to see them on my American television. Great. I don't need to use a stream or get up at 4 a.m., but I also see it as a retirement package for them, and they're finally getting paid at some level commensurate to the years of enjoyment I've seen out of them. And I feel it's selfish for me to want them to toil on the independent scene and make less money just so I can see them do more moves at risk to themselves.
Right. Yeah. Yep. All right, so let's set the table here. This might be a little confusing because the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show has turned into a special mailbag edition today, and that is because on the Thursday flagship of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast on Podcast One, Rich and I just ran long in our discussion about Jim Ross, Brock Lesnar, New Japan, Cody Rhodes, his WWE potential, a lot of hot topics for the week, and we just didn't get to the mailbag, and we had used up our time on Podcast One, so we decided to do a bonus show of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, a mailbag edition, And so this is just a continuation of my conversation with Rich Fan on our separate feed, our Red feed here. So you obviously have found our Red feed if you were listening to the Podcast One show, the flagship, in the first hour that Rich Fan and I discussed this week's happenings over at Podcast One on the show with the blue logo. Now, if you only subscribe to the post shows and you're confused by what this other show is, well, go subscribe. Just search Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or on the Podcast One app, and you'll see my name and face, and it says Wade Keller. It's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One, and that's free to subscribe to also. So go check that out. Rich Fan is my guest. He is the host of the Deep Dive with Rich Fan every Saturday night on the PW Torch Livecast podcast lineup. That's available by searching PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or TuneIn or Beyond Pod, just about anywhere you listen to Pro Wrestling Podcasts. Just search PW Torch to get all 7 weekly shows. We'll talk more about his show in a few minutes, but I want to get back to my conversations with Rich. Got a lot of cool topics here in the mailbag. All right, let's go to our next topic here. Kind of, well, no, I guess tangentially related. Andre says, why is the category of cruiserweight frowned on by pro wrestlers in the West, but most of these same smaller athletes jump at the chance to be involved in the juniors in Japan? I'd prefer to be called a cruiserweight over a junior. In an editorial back in the early 90s, I wrote, and Mark Madden has since taken credit for this, but he's wrong. I wrote that the light heavyweight division in the United States, it was called junior heavyweight, but primarily light heavyweight, in different companies, should be changed to cruiserweight because it has a connotation of speed. It doesn't have the stigma of years of junior and light heavyweights being treated as jobbers. I remember Denny Brown, the NWA junior heavyweight champion, doing a TV job to Ric Flair, the NWA heavyweight champion. And I was just like, why even have a junior heavyweight championship if you're, and it wasn't like a job like, hey, the two champ, it's not like Cormier and Stipe, and it's like, oh, let's see who wins. It was, oh, yeah, you know, Denny Brown's going to get killed by Ric Flair. Now, Denny, you know, was lacking in the charisma department and the excitement department. He just, for whatever reason, was the junior champion back in the day for the NWA. But it defined down what it meant to be a junior heavyweight or light heavyweight champion. And I was like, let's just reframe it, give it a new shiny name, call them cruiserweights that's got a positive connotation in boxing, and do it. And Eric Bischoff, a short time later, took on the name, and then Mark Madden took credit for it. I think he just forgot that I wrote it when he proposed it to Eric. But nevertheless, that is where that started. But the thing is that any term that might sound cool in a vacuum gets defined based on how it's portrayed in that ecosystem or in that culture. And so wrestlers know how juniors are treated in Japan and how they're framed and portrayed and what the path is if you are labeled that. And in the United States, we know what it is. It's the match where the purple lights come out and people go buy popcorn. And it's a show that WWE doesn't talk about, and it's with small guys in a company that worships big guys. So that has changed the perception of the term. So it's not so much the word itself, but I think how that phrase has been utilized over the years that makes wrestlers in the wrestler culture flock to be juniors instead of cruiserweights. It's not the name, it's the context in which they'll be used and presented. Rich, anything you disagree with there and anything you want to add?
No, I think you're correct. And I think there's also missing the element of, in Japan, you can have a graduation, so to speak, of a junior heavyweight being sold as he gained weight and is now in the heavyweight division. Mm. We've seen that with Finn Balor. We've seen that with Kenny Omega. We've seen that with Tetsuya Naito. We've seen that with Kota Ibushi. In fact, Kota Ibushi is like, why do I have to be defined? Well, I mean, this is a very Kota Ibushi phrase. Why do I have to be defined by my weight? Why can't I just wrestle for titles? And, you know, no one could wrestle, you know, a unicorn if he could. So Kota isn't the best, you know, advocate for it. But I think the point is a valid one. If you are a junior heavyweight and you go to the best of the super juniors, first of all, it isn't 205 Live or it isn't something where you're being treated as a joke. You're being invited to be one of the best 32 junior heavyweights in the world as sold by that tournament. It isn't like this is meh of the juniors, you know.
Right.
So they're that's that level. Also, when you win the junior heavyweight title, you are seen with a lot of respect. Now, the writer's email leaves out, say, the junior heavyweight tag titles, which I would argue were treated like paper basically for the last 4 years. It was when in doubt, throw a multi-team match in that were junior heavyweights and call it a day. But in terms of that singles title, yeah, that one got a lot of respect. And I think I might be one of the sole people that did this. I liked the X Division option of if you are the X Division champion and you want to trade it in for a shot, even though you're a smaller guy at the heavyweight champion, you have to give up your title, and that's the risk you take. I felt like that was a really cool thing, but the way they went about it at times didn't necessarily help the person after the fact.
Let's go to a related question here. This comes from RT, Richie in Ireland, in fact, Ireland. very represented today. The UK, very represented today, Rich.
Yeah, see?
No, can't do it. I was trying to get you to walk into that. All right. Hi, guys. Do you think it would be worthwhile to bring another women's title into the mix, given the size of the division and the talent there? Maybe have a mid-card title to keep things interesting rather than throwing them all into a multi-woman tag match just to get them on TV and be seen to earn their pay. Maybe resurrect the European title and put it in the women's division. Can't recommend VIP enough. More than value for money. Love all your content, especially the archives. Keep up the good work, you and all the guys. Thank you, Richie. First of all, I have an issue with the UK championship being defended in the United States with two people who aren't from the UK. Like, what makes it a UK title if you're going to... the idea of, oh, we're going to have a European title. Why have a European title if it... Like, what's the parameter that makes it a European title? It's just a name. So, no, don't suddenly have a European title being defended on SmackDown, with Alexa Bliss against whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, no. Don't just slap a country on it, but treat it as if it's just a secondary or third title. As for having a secondary women's title, I would also say no, because there's already two women's singles titles, and a limited number of women in the division. I think the solution isn't to that Richie is proposing another title would solve. I don't think the solution is limited to adding another title so that women can have a reason to fight. I think there's a better way to do it, which is make women fighting each other count because they're fighting to try to move up the ranks to get a shot at whomever the women's singles champion is. I think there's a better argument to be made to merge the two women's titles and have people in both shows fighting for a chance to get that shot and be deemed the true number one contender. So there's a top contender on SmackDown, top contender on Raw, and then there's a big announcement by the GMs make their case, and then the championship committee or whomever make these decisions. Whoever coach said, was it? I'm trying to think who brought up. It was Mojo, Raleigh, and one of the announcers just said, yeah, Mojo's trying to make his case to the powers that be who dictate, pay-per-view matches, that he belongs in more prominent matches. And I thought, well, this isn't a mystery. It's Paige and Kurt Angle. they're the people who make those. But nevertheless, have the women battle it out so they get that coveted pay-per-view title shot against the one women's champion. I think there's a better argument for that than adding a third singles title, Rich.
And I think one of the better ways to do this instead of adding a title is giving the joy of having your hand raise as much power as having a arbitrary title change. Because one of the things I run into is on SmackDown, when I see Becky Lynch win a match, I'm invested. Mm-hmm. Becky takes you on a journey. She is a person more than almost more than anyone on the women's roster currently that you truly feel like you're with it with her. You're on that journey with her.
Yep.
And because of that, you, no matter what the storyline is, you feel like, I know how Becky feels about this. I know why she feels this way. They need more of those stories and less women be crazy. Because that seems to be the
yes.
foul that they put a lot of these things under. It's like, would you ever just have two guys standing there next to each other and flip out and have a feud because the other person refused to acknowledge their existence as a friend? Now, we did have a feud in NXT where a person didn't have their name said, but it's these little, like, this is what women think. And part of it to me is not having a woman on the roster to be representative as a writer. Part of it's also not thinking, why wouldn't a woman just naturally not like someone else and want to compete with them rather than they have to go to a mental institution because women fighting is crazy.
The Bailey-Sasha thing. Did you get the sense this week, Rich, that they just abandoned ship on that? That they just – they switched therapists, didn't provide much audio, just – showed up. I mean, it was so weird because they're like, well, this was earlier today, but then like they kept going back to it throughout the show as if it was like this live look-in at them just sitting, you know, being stern and you know, not getting along and being upset with one another. The whole thing was just weird this week. It did sort of feel like they just decided to abandon it.
Yeah, and they did it in a very WWE way of, we're going to keep doing it, but we're going to make you sick of it because now we're sick of it.
All right, we are back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Rich Fan from the Deep Dive, the Saturday edition of the PW Torch Livecast lineup. There are 7 PW Torch Livecasts per week, all with different themes or different specific topics to them. Monday night, it's MMA talk for pro wrestling fans. A lot of talk about Brock Lesnar, understandably, this week, but also the big happenings on Saturday's UFC pay-per-view. And then on Tuesdays, it's the ROH theme show, Talking Honor. On Wednesday nights, it's PWT Talks NXT with a roundtable review of the NXT TV show and all topics NXT, including history, looking ahead to takeovers, and that kind of thing. And then Thursday nights, it's the Impact-themed show with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. Friday, I handpick a best of PW Torch Livecast that either links into an anniversary of a current event that we covered or a big-name interview. And then Saturday, it's the Deep Dive with Rich Fan, which we're going to talk about in just a second here. And then Sundays, it's Wrestling Night in America. Greg Parks, the host, this past Sunday, reuniting with Pat McNeil. Greg has a rotation of different co-hosts. That is the show where they talk about all the big events in professional wrestling. WWE, NXT, ROH, Impact, New Japan, and more. And this Sunday, after Extreme Rules, they'll be live on the air. After Extreme Rules goes off the air, all you have to do to stream the show live, if you want to get your post pay-per-view fix immediately, I mean, within 5 minutes, they're on the air live, go to pwtorchlivecast.com and you can stream it. Now, the whole show is also available afterwards, a few hours later, by download. And you can subscribe to all 7 shows for free. Just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or just about anywhere that you listen to pro wrestling podcasts. Stitcher, TuneIn, all those places. Beyond Pod, Downcast, on and on. Just search PW Torch and subscribe to those for free. Rich, talk about the deep dive, maybe the last couple episodes, what you talked about, and what you have planned the next couple weeks, if you are planning that far ahead.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I try to plan all the way up to and including our year anniversary coming up in August, if memory serves. So the Deep Dive is a 1-hour live cast where callers call in, and I try to set a topic for the hour. And I usually bring in a varied amount of guests. I have some favorites I bring in because I like their opinions, and I like giving their voice to the PW Torch family as far as listening. In particular, I like to use a lot Bree, who's a woman who is in marketing but a huge pro wrestling fan, and so having a woman of color that can kind of talk about that. Quentin Moody talks a lot about the lucha style, and I'll have him on in a little bit to talk about how CMLL, AAA, and the Crash working together is this unforeseen territorial like melting of the minds. And so for the next few weeks, we're going to be diving into some fun topics. In particular, this weekend, I'm going to be talking about the elephant in the room leading into Extreme Rules with Brandon from the Why So Serious pod, which is Roman Reigns. Do we just accept him for what he is until he leaves, get sick of it, whatever? And, you know, welcome anyone's opinion on how
do
Roman
we just do we just hate watch him and learn to enjoy it?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And yes, we even talked about that. I talked about that a few weeks ago with Arsene Darouche about the idea of punishing yourself via hate watching.
Yes.
And I think Roman is the apex of hate watching, because even in the arenas, it's like you cheer what he's doing because you like the move in the moment, but then you boo the person who's doing it. And I would argue, I know he isn't the most couth person, but Roman could learn a lot from Tama Tonga in terms of being authentic. Now, Tama's authentic to a fault, and Roman maybe wouldn't want to go that far. I mean, you know, you don't want to sprinkle that many four-letter words. But Yeah, so the deep dive is – that's our – in a nutshell. I like to hyper-focus on one thing. We talk about it. We go into little splinter areas. A few weeks from now during our anniversary show, I'm going to have Kylan Furlow on, and he's going to be talking about what makes the best wrestler appearance in a TV show. And for him, he always cites the Vader episode of Boy Meets World, and I think there could be some other opportunities as well. So if you get a chance, we're on Saturdays. Definitely, if you want to email me ahead of time, pwtdive@gmail.com, we can chat and kind of chop it up.
Awesome, awesome. That's pwtorchlivecast.com or search PWTorch where you listen to podcasts. All right, let's go to another WWE booking related question. Ben from Hawaii. The booking of Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens has really been bugging me. I'm not the first person to say this, but can someone tell me exactly what it is that Owens has done to deserve this treatment? Braun is coming off way too much like a bully, and Owens seems like a little kid scared of having his lunch money taken away. This only was made worse when Kevin Owens goes to the authority figure to help and is punished for it. And then he says, Bayley and Sasha storyline makes this even worse. Bayley finally stands up for herself. She gets a great reaction and then gets punished for it. What the hell? A bully should never be put in the role of a babyface, and someone who sticks up for themselves should never be expected to look like a heel. This all just feels like Vince McMahon wanting to metaphorically push his audience into a pool. Rich, Kevin Owens, specifically your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think Kevin, for a guy whose signature moment in WWE was headbutting the 70-plus-year-old owner, has been defined into this nebulous joke of a person simply because Vince wanted to see someone have poop on them. And it's weird because on one show, you'll have Daniel Bryan and Kane as the arbiters of every storyline thread of continuity ever imaginable for jokes. And on the other, we're to believe a grown man with a wife and kids didn't take a shower in the week between one episode and the next.
The Kevin Owens Braun Strowman match Sunday at Extreme Rules in a cage should not feel like a child going to the principal's office or being punished by the principal. And that is, I think, what Ben is getting at. Kevin Owens is a former Universal Champion, and while he can play that the role that he is currently playing very well, that doesn't mean it's the best role for him. And this gets into what I think is going to be an increasing tug of war as we watch WWE's product, especially under the new TV deal. And as Bruce Mitchell has been saying a lot, WWE are no longer wrestling promoters. They're content providers. And the content providing is Kevin Owens in the role that he's in now. They're providing content. It's, okay, Bayley's red hot. Seems like she might have had a spark in that feud. The crowd got behind her. Let's change plans because we're onto something here. That's what a wrestling promoter would have done and said, let's take this version of Bayley and run with it. Let's drop this thing we have planned for 10 minutes from now on TV about a counseling session. And let's go with this because we're onto something. But the content provider side of WWE says, we have segments we need to fill and we want to fill them in amusing fashion. And Kevin Owens is amusing in this role. But it doesn't, when you think about Sunday's match against Braun, it doesn't set us up for it seeming as if this is a fight between two equals or near equals. It doesn't even seem like Kevin Owens is being set up as having a chance. This is just see Kevin Owens run around and cry like a baby that he's in this match in the first place. And they're not even selling us on, you know, hey, Kevin Owens is the dirtiest player in the game. And Braun Strowman can't be overconfident. Kevin Owens might be playing the role of someone who doesn't want to be in there, but deep down, he's relishing the opportunity to dish it out to this guy who he sees as a bully or a monster. Like, that story's not even being told. This is just amuse yourself with Kevin Owens getting beat up, this tiny guy, you know, with a bowling ball under his shirt, getting beat up by this monster beast Braun Strowman. I think you can have it both. I think you can have both. I think you can provide content without completely losing sight of your job as a wrestling promoter.
I think of this, and it might sound really dumb to some, but there was this movie that came out a couple of years ago, Watchmen, and it was based on this comic book. And it wasn't a very good movie for some people. I'm sure Bruce might agree, disagree, whatever. But one of my favorites, it's been burned into my brain for eternity. there's one of the superheroes gets caught and they get put in prison because when you take someone's mask off and they've been beating people up extrajudicially for a few years, that's illegal. And so he goes to jail, but he's in jail with all these criminals who he put away, and he's, you know, in the lunch line, he beats one up and he turns around, and this is where Kevin Owens comes in. He defiantly yells to them after he's maimed one of the villains, "You guys got to understand, I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me." And at no point do I feel like Kevin Owens has the temerity, as a guy who nearly crippled Vince McMahon, from what they sold us as, a guy who's just been this duplicitous person who's so vicious, so violent. Where did that guy go? Did his fear of heights negate his ability to commit violence against another person? And to tag into Bailey, you have these two people going at it, and Kurt Angle is just happy as a clam with it. But why would you not care that staff members in a pro wrestling environment are, you know, cars are getting flipped? If he cared about property damage 6 months ago, why isn't he caring about it now? And these are just the little things that just gnaw at you when it comes to why do I have to think about this when I just want to think about how awesome it'll be with Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens in a cage.
Let's take this opportunity just to talk a little bit about other matches at Extreme Rules before going back to the mailbag. And this is going to be a discussion I have tomorrow with Sam Roberts, who's going to be on Interview Friday with me. I'm sure it will be, because Sam and I love talking about this, which is match order. And it's not the most important thing in the world, but it is important in that it sends a message to the fan base. Are certain wrestlers bigger than titles? Are certain stipulation matches bigger than certain wrestlers or feuds or championship matches? This is a dilemma. They don't have a Universal title match on the show, but they have Roman Reigns on the show in a match that has been the centerpiece of Raw, I would argue, more than Braun Strowman Kevin Owens has, even though that has a cage going for it. If this was a Raw-only event, and let's just say that for a second, do you think they would headline with Braun and Owens because it's a cage, Roman Reigns and Lashley because at one time it was a number one contendership match? It probably does involve who will beat Brock Lesnar eventually, and it's Roman Reigns. Or do you think they would go with a 30-minute Iron Man match because Seth Rollins is the most popular babyface in the company, arguably at this point, and the Intercontinental title actually puts a title at stake, and it has a special stipulation? Or do you do Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax because you have Ronda Rousey at ringside? I think you can make a case for all four, and I don't think they're all super strong cases, but because of that, I think they're all relatively in the same category where you could listen to reasonable people argue that any of those four should go on last. Where are you on that? And then we'll introduce SmackDown into it to kind of complicate it. But first, focus on Raw.
With Raw, I would say my heart would want the Intercontinental title match or the women's match to be the main event. But my head would say that they would more likely than not, if this was just a Raw pay-per-view, put Roman and Bobby in the main event. Just because it's Roman. I would be inclined to say that that's probably not going to happen. I think it is more likely that you would see the Intercontinental title match, though, show up as like the third match on the card, maybe the fourth, because of the fact that you have that half hour locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't want to just have that saved for the end.
So if we move AJ Styles into the conversation, defending the WWE title, it would seem like that should be the gimme as being the final match. If we just say AJ Styles defended the WWE title on a pay-per-view, the Universal title is not being defended, and there isn't officially number one contendership at stake with Roman Reigns, there is the cage match isn't a blow-off to a monumental feud. It's more of an amusing, lopsided, let's see this joke of a wrestler get beat up by a monster setup. And Ronda Rousey herself isn't fighting. So this is obviously an opportunity and a chance to establish with fans, hey, this WWE championship, the longest reigning or the longest tenured title, that of course goes on last. But then you throw in the fact that it's against Rusev. And I'm a fan of Rusev in a lot of ways, but it doesn't feel like a pay-per-view caliber title match. They tried to heat it up this week, and I think they fell short. So you can look at that and say, well, it should go last. Maybe you still make the case it should go last. But it's Rusev as a challenger in a match that doesn't feel red hot. So your take on how that fits into the conversation regarding the big four matches from Raw?
I think that because of the issue with Rusev being the challenger, and I shouldn't say issue, but that's kind of how they're treating it, I would say that it's more likely that that isn't the main event, and I think it's for the reasons you mentioned. Because it's Rusev and they don't necessarily pay that attention, it would make it more likely to me that on the Raw side, Ronda gets pushed up more. Because to me, you make Roman the main event with Bobby Lashley if you know Brock is going to show up at the end. Because then you have this thing hanging, oh, wow, who is this, the next contender to Brock? Because if they really wanted to play their cards right, and this goes back to our original conversation, you could set this up as Brock has claimed he didn't have legitimate challengers. And in one week's time, he's found two challengers in both of the combat sports he participates in.
As I'm sure you know, coming up this weekend, Sunday night, in fact, is WWE Extreme Rules. And you have a chance to get WWE Network for free. Now through July 15th, you can have a free month trial. No, wait a second. A 2-month free trial. That's right. Get 2 months because you're a listener of this show. Go to WWENetwork.com/Wade and sign up and be part of the conversation. And then join Greg Parks Sunday night on Wrestling Night in America at PWTorchLivecast.com. And because you have WWE Network and because you'll have a chance to watch Extreme Rules, you can call the show and talk to Greg and his co-host and be part of the conversation, be up to speed on what's going on, because you'll have seen the event live on the WWE Network. And you can stream it, of course, on your phone, on your TV, on your tablet, on your laptop. I've tried all those different methods. And you can watch 10,000 hours of video on demand, including something Todd Martin talked about yesterday on The Fix with Todd Martin, a VIP audio show, which was the outtakes of the Lex Express. Some funny clips, some at Lex Luger's expense, but fun from that era of Lex Luger's career. All kinds of cool hidden gems on WWE Network. You get a look also behind the scenes with WWE's groundbreaking original series and documentaries. And as I said, you can access it anywhere, anytime, on any device. I mentioned TVs, phones, tablets, and laptops, but also game consoles. So again, now through July 15th, check it out for 2 months free. You got nothing to lose. WWENetwork.com/Wade. I mentioned Extreme Rules. We'll be talking about that later on the show. This includes the reunion of Team Hell No, as Daniel Bryan and Kane take on the Bludgeon Brothers for the SmackDown Tag Team titles. AJ Styles battles Rusev for the WWE title. Plus Nia Jax takes on Alexa Bliss for the Women's Championship. And Carmella takes on Asuka for the SmackDown Women's title. And then in that same 2 months, things really kick up with SummerSlam on August 19th. WWENetwork.com/Wade. Not just 1 month, get 2 free months. That includes this weekend's event and SummerSlam. And that also includes my favorite weekly TV show, NXT, every Wednesday night. And also NXT TakeOver coming up SummerSlam weekend in Brooklyn. So 2 months free, WWENetwork.com/Wade. That's WWENetwork.com/WADE. All right, let's go back to the mailbag and get a couple more in here before we wrap up. Kyle from St. Louis says, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn a few years ago was the first WWE event I had watched since 2006, and it was what got me back into the product. Good choice. The opening match of the pay-per-view was Tyler Breeze versus Jushin Thunder Liger, and I became an immediate fan. With Fandango out for up to 6 months, do you think Tyler Breeze could be in line for a small push? Seeing him in that backstage segment with the Riot Squad reminded me of the injury, and I can't help but think Breeze would make a good addition to 205 Live. What are your thoughts on Breeze? Is his character too cold at this point to add star power to 205? And if 205 Live isn't the place for him, where do you see him fitting into the WWE machine?
Well, I definitely see him fitting in as more of a comedy guy, because he does that great. I don't think they would treat him with the NXT respect on his way out of being the pretty boy who could still fight. In fact, senior columnist Bruce Mitchell had a comment that he didn't think that Tyler could rip a t-shirt in half, to which Tyler responded. And
yes, I can.
I was like, well, okay. yes, I can.
Just to let you know, he didn't go, you're right, I can't rip a t-shirt. He did say, I can.
Yeah, he said he could. I was hoping he would attach a video
that'd be great.
New PW Torch T, but I've been instructed by Bruce, and Bruce, I hope the check is cleared. The quest for the Bruce Mitchell t-shirt continues. Once he gets one, he should mail it, though, to Tyler so he can actually rip it.
And, oh, that'd be good.
But yeah, I think for him, he's just going to be a comedy act until he isn't. and the longer he stays in the company, the more likely it is he can kind of find that lane and stay in that lane. It seems to me that No Way Jose, I thought he would hit it and stay, but it looks like he's kind of not catching on the way that Breeze or even a Fandango did.
Yeah, yep. Okay, I said we had some Lesnar questions. Let me get to at least one of them here. Kevin in Albany says, I'm sure you will discuss this later in the week, or maybe you did on the Raw Post Show and I missed it, but what are some theories as to why WWE didn't mention Brock Lesnar much, his much-talked-about appearance on UFC Saturday? I just don't get this company sometimes. They put the top title on Lesnar because of his legitimacy and crossover appeal, but then when that crossover occurs, they don't mention it. I get the opening segment with Reigns calling out Lashley was paying homage to Cormier, calling out Brock and creating an altercation, but why not just come right out and say, OMG, did you see what Brock did on Saturday? I know Dana White won't like it, and I'm sure that's why they won't do it, but Braun should say that he's going to show up at UFC or Lesnar's training camp to cash in Money in the Bank. I don't think Dana would care. We know it won't happen, and it's a joke, so why not just have Braun say something to that extent? Maybe Lesnar won't show up in WWE until after his proposed UFC fight in January, but if the SummerSlam No Mercy match is happening, I would like to see Lesnar versus Lashley. Let Paul Heyman hype Lashley's MMA resume and background and say Lesnar is glad Lashley became number one contender because he needs a good sparring session or preparation fight before his UFC title match. Rich, what do you think about what Kevin has to say about this?
I think Kevin's got some good points. It's ironic that the storyline that's sitting there and begging to be told is the one that Lashley told prior to his departure in TNA, where you have your camp telling you you got to focus on one or the other, but you can't do both. And the friction that that caused with Top Team and Bobby and all of his guys. But instead, I think what's going to be – what the issue is to me, and Wade, feel free to chime in, I just feel like it's the control. Brock has been, from the second he returned to the WWE, the one that's been on the front foot. And it's very, very disconcerting to them because when you have someone who can have that much power, they may ask for things that others don't, like days off. And when those days off are seen as a negative and not a positive, you then get a fan base that buys – into that, even if they don't necessarily buy into the messenger. I mean, my good friend Daniel Palmer, who does the deep dive, retweeted when I mentioned that Hiromu got hurt, the fact that wrestlers need unions. And, you know, if you have a powerful guy, you can think about things like that that are high level. But when you're out for yourself and you are just worried about making that next check or getting to the next town because you have to pay for all your lodgings and all that other stuff, it's a lot that weighs on you. So I think with Brock, having someone who's so in control of his career is something they do not like, even though they like the notoriety he provides.
Let me I agree with what you said, and let's go to another Lesnar question here and sneak it in. Kevin in Albany also says, obviously you're going to talk about Lesnar, Cormier, and USC. I want to add a scenario. We know of the options of having Lesnar drop the belt to someone at his next appearance, strip him of the title, or just keeping the belt until whenever. Do you think WWE would do what UFC often does and crown an interim champion? In this scenario, Lesnar comes back for a matchup at WrestleMania 35 or whenever. They did it with Razor and HBK as well with Cena and CM Punk. Those are the only two scenarios I can remember, but it creates an easy and interesting story. My guess is seeing this as a UFC title fight, Lesnar's going to take this very seriously and have at least an 8-week training camp. And he likely doesn't want a fake fight until after his UFC match. The fight with Mark Hunt, even though Lesnar knew in advance, it was announced on short notice. So I think this time around, Brock will want to just be a UFC fighter going in. It's also interesting, as Cormier has noted, he plans to retire when he turns 40, which is next March. So Lesnar could win, and he may have another title defense against Stipe or another heavyweight, as well as the cash-out fight against Jon Jones. So I guess another question, should Lesnar win his fight against DC, how many fights do you see him having total in UFC? Rich, I'll throw to you first again on that.
Gosh, pending him not getting popped, I would say 3 at most.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's fair. I mean, I don't think Brock's going to want to fight to prove that he's better than all the up-and-comers. I think he's going to want to fight big money matches. You know, even Cormier said it at the press conference, you know, about defending the light heavyweight title. He's like, there's nobody in the division I can make money against. You know, like, right. I'm at a point where I don't want to fight just to fight. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, UFC is a business in the business of making money. And with the money that ownership paid, they want to make money. They're not in it for the purity of the sport. But the idea now that people win a championship and it's not about fighting the best contender, it's about fighting whoever they can make money with, that's another topic for another day, but that can grow to be a problem in MMA, even if it's pragmatic in the short run. The idea of an interim title, though, I just think you're drawing more attention to something than you want to. I think there's a way to make it work. I don't trust that WWE could make it work. I like the idea of just stripping Lesnar and then having a story later, if he can come back, where he comes back for the title he never lost, and you turn that into a storyline if it happens, if it makes sense to do it. But if you add the interim title status, you're making that title seem less important, and you're making it seem like it's inevitable Lesnar shows up, and whoever is champion now isn't holding the real belt. There's an asterisk next to it. And I don't think, unless there's a good short-term storyline where, you know, someone's injured, they're going to be out 3 months or 4 months, but you know they're going to be back in full time, and it's a money match, then I say do it. But with Lesnar, it just feels too open-ended, and he's only going to come back for one match. So why even bother?
Yeah, and for me, I was thinking, as you talked about, it's the irony with UFC of, in their heyday, when I watched it in college, they were known for the big show super fights. And as they move into this new era of digital content, they're providing freak show super fights. Now, it might not be a Butterbean versus a 170-pound, you know, Japanese man, but now you have the potential of, are you going to see a John Jones versus Cormier as heavyweight, light heavyweight? Are you going to see a Brock versus Jones if he ever gets out of suspension? Mm-hmm. Are we going to see a Conor McGregor versus a Jones or something like that, just to say he can beat anyone at any weight? You know, there's so many questions and so many things that interest me on that. And then when you add in the WWE side, the only time I've seen them do that correctly is the Intercontinental title vis-a-vis WrestleMania 10.
All right, one more on Lesnar here. Zach from Indiana, because we have to have a Zach. Currently listening to Mailbag Friday, and I had a thought. I know it's unlikely, but what if Brock is saying he doesn't have a good opponent at SummerSlam and doesn't have to defend the title due to his contract in order to set up a Braun cash-in ahead of time? Brock says he has no good opponents and doesn't have to defend, but wouldn't the Money in the Bank contract override Brock's contract, forcing him to defend against Braun at SummerSlam anyway? This would be a really unique way to cash in and force Lesnar to defend, even though he doesn't appear to want to. Curious your thoughts about this. That would be awesome if this all was because Brock showing up at SummerSlam against his own will to face Braun Strowman, who just beats him. And instead of having Roman beat Brock, they have Braun beat Brock. And they do it at SummerSlam, and Brock is showing up essentially against his will under protest. Get it over with. He's done, and now we can just turn the page, and instead of having Roman beat Brock, which is going to be a disaster because no one's going to like either guy at that point, but they'll probably cheer Brock, if anyone, give fans a happy moment where a clear-cut babyface beats Brock, gets some rub from doing so, and you get in and out of it quickly. To me, that's kind of what I want, because I don't want the Universal title held up in abeyance, or whatever word WWE is going to use, held hostage by Lesnar indefinitely. I just want the number one title back on Raw if you're going to have that title. Rich?
I agree. I think if you're going to have a situation where Brock loses it, going to Braun calling his shot and demanding Lesnar show up by way of the Money in the Bank not only sets Braun into that legendary status of, this is the toughest guy on the show, this is the toughest guy in the company, but it also prevents that silliness of, we're going to have after all these years of building for the unstoppable juggernaut that is Brock Lesnar, he loses to time. Like, that doesn't do anything for anyone. So I would like to see that. Or worst case, I'd like to see a situation where the winner of Bobby and Roman have Braun interject himself with the Money in the Bank, and Braun or that person beats – Braun beats that person, or that person beats Braun. So that way, if you do have this nebulous, no one ever beat Lesnar, great, he could come back at some point. But if he never comes back, it's a footnote they'll gloss over anyway, until it matters.
Yes, yes. All right, real quick before we wrap up, Rich, the ROH reality series, Dojo Pro. Talk about the concept a little bit, what you know about it, and what you think about it as a concept.
Well, I was first put onto it by Harley Padgett, who does Talking Honor, and he was talking to me about it because the whole point of it is the dojo is going to be something you can watch on Amazon. Like, I was watching the part of the first episode before this while I was working with my campers on Amazon Prime, And essentially, it's like the belt system. And so if you've ever done martial arts, it's a 12-episode series. 13 indie wrestlers compete in a gauntlet, with the winner earning a shot at the Ring of Honor television title. And so currently on the roster for Dojo Pro, the names that stood out to me were Joey Ryan and Mr. Athletic Jeff Cobb. But they also have Joey Janela, and they go through formal rankings, and it's not the top 10 like you're thinking. And I'll read off the names. So you have Jeff Cobb, Shane Strickland, the current MLW champion, the MJF, who is a Miz type jerk on the indies, Aaron Solo, who is the husband of, I want to say that's Sasha Banks' husband, but I could be wrong. Ricky Starks, who I've never seen wrestle. Cowboy James Storm, who you've interviewed several times. Brandon Cutler, Joey Janela, Corey Hollis, Wheeler Yuta, Gunnar Miller, Kevin Yu, and Kerry Awful. So you have this mixture of wrestlers, different levels. And that, to me, is very attractive because you're now moving up a ladder. It's kind of like if you're a 90s, well, 80s kid, I guess I have to admit, like myself, in the 90s, there was a series called WMAC Masters that I was obsessed with because as a pro wrestling fan, what was cooler than taking pro wrestling at, I didn't realize it at the time, and add martial arts to it where you have to fight each other to get a dragon star that lets you challenge for the champion, but you only get one shot at the champ. And if you don't beat them, you got to go back down to the bottom of the rankings. And so they're doing the same thing here. But when you win, you get this nice belt that looks like the WWE title if you added the belts you would wear in judo or taekwondo or jiu-jitsu, where the little ribbons hang to the sides. So it's a very interesting looking belt, but more important than that, you get a Ring of Honor television title shot. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking to Harley and Emily. I'm sorry, Harley and his co-host handling it and giving some information to me. And then after G1 and my brain has settled, I'm going to watch the whole thing over and I'm going to have him onto the deep dive just to talk about the idea of how awesome it is that they're using this technology in a way that's very innovative and engrossing for you, the user, and not just content for a provider.
You mentioned G1. We'll wrap up on that note. What's your most likely finals and what's your dark horse finals, and what do you hope or vote to happen that you are skeptical will, but you would still be delighted if it did?
Well, for me, I think either a Okada Ibushi or Okada Naito final. I think it might be a Suzuki Ibushi or Suzuki Naito final. I'm going to guess it's Naito, because I think it's his time to finally pull himself out of the morass he's been in the last few years of, can I do it? Can I get it done? One of the things I'm looking forward to is seeing Tama Tonga face off against Kenny Omega in the G1 this year, and how Hangman Page does in the G1, because I think, as I've been trying to ring the bell this year, I think this year's going to be great for him. This G1's going to be great for him. But I think 2019, he's going to be in a spot where we're seeing Switchblade now, where you're like, wow, he really made it. He's really in a position. And they're going to need that, especially if, as Cody mentioned when he interviewed with you last week, that interesting October and November leads to departures in January and February.
Rich, thank you so much. You embody the flagship, the spirit of the flagship format. We hit a lot of different topics, didn't overlap much at all on what we talked about on the Wake Keller Pro Wrestling post shows earlier in the week, breaking down the specific angles, but we got some broad conversation in about Extreme Rules, so I'm glad about that. Some great New Japan talk, and even some ROH Dojo Pro talk. So thank you so much. Appreciate your time, and we will do this again.
Oh, always a pleasure, and I would definitely invite anyone who enjoyed hearing my way too long answers at times to jump into the deep dive or listen to me tonight, well, Wednesdays, on the East Coast Cast VIP with Travis, where we usually yell at each other until I fall asleep.
Yes. So social media again, where should people go?
Oh, absolutely. If you want to follow me on social media, at @rich_fann, F-A-N-N. And you could also follow me by way of our at East Coast Cast on Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. And I will note, you can now find us on Instagram at PW Torch. So go check out Instagram, our new page on Instagram at PW Torch, to go along with at PW Torch on Twitter, and Facebook.com/PW Torch on Facebook. Rich, thanks again. We'll hear from you on Saturday and on the VIP edition of the East Coast Cast between now and then.
Thanks for having me, Wade. It was a pleasure.
In DDP's latest Motivational Monday message, it's a video on the DDP Yoga app, he quotes Thomas Jefferson, "If you want something you've never had, you have to do something you've never done." And he goes on to explain that you've got to put the work in, but you can't be afraid to fail as long as you learn from failing. He talked about a personal story of deciding to learn to read at age 31 because of ADD and dyslexia. He had to teach himself to read at age 31, and he put post-it reminders everywhere that reminded him, read today, read a page today. If DDP at age 31 could decide that he wants to learn to read and then does it, and you've thought about getting in better shape and getting healthier and haven't taken action, this is an opportunity for you to do so, and to do so for free. You can try the DDP Yoga app for free for 7 days. You can try it for a full week, and if you don't like it, you can cancel it and still keep all the information when you're ready to try it again. So go check it out, ddpyoga.com/Wade. You've heard me talk about it. If you've heard this show, I'm a believer in the workouts. I love his recipes. You can go online, not just on your phone or app, but you can log in on your laptop and just click through some of the healthy recipes that he's got up there. He's got DDP's Green Machine, goat yogurt and fruit smoothie, a key lime smoothie, a peanut butter shake smoothie. He's got a video up on how to eat healthy on the road, his favorite protein bars, healthy bottled juices. He's got all these ways to eat gluten-free and to experience what it's like to not be bogged down by gluten in your system. That affects different people differently, but you might be someone who's being dragged down by having gluten in your diet to a degree that you don't even realize. So this isn't just great yoga programs and workouts, including live workouts. There's a new one coming up in about 4 days that you can watch live and do it with DDP and his team. But there's a ton of workouts from beginner to expert. You can do workouts, as I've said, starting in a chair or in a bed if you're injured or if for any reason that's the place you need to start your workouts. He's got every level covered with workouts that will bring you along at the right pace so that you can be your best you. So go ahead and give it a try. I highly recommend it. Go to ddpyoga.com/Wade. You can also, by the way, take 20% off an annual membership and 20% off DVD sets if you're a little old school. So go check it out, ddpyoga.com/Wade. It's an opportunity to dramatically increase your flexibility, strengthen your core like never before, and do so all with minimal joint impact. And DDP himself is there on the app to keep you focused on your goals, and he maps out the workouts that you can do. So again, check it out, ddpyoga.com/Wade.